Everyone, welcome our new sponsor, Diet Smoke.
Diet Smoke is the premier source for legal THC and mushroom products.
The team at Diet Smoke sent us gummies to enjoy while we whore and chill. My favorite are the grape sleep gummies.
And mine are the cherry lime gummies. With a wide range of strengths and doses, Diet Smoke promises to find the perfect product for you.
Whether you want something strong to unwind, a boost of energy to keep you going, or a lighter option for a mellow high, Diet Smoke has you covered.
They understand everyone is different, which is why they're dedicated to helping you find the perfect product. Their customer service team will be by your side helping you along the way.
Diet Smoke has cannabis gummies, shots, and vapes, each one made to deliver the best balance of flavor and effect.
So don't settle for less and join the Diet Smoke community and discover the buzz for you. Visit dietsmoke.com today and use code DFWTO for 50% off any item and enjoy your journey to cannabis bliss.
Diet Smoke, your partner in finding the perfect THC and mushroom products. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Hey guys, it's Casper
and Becky
from the DFWTO podcast. If you've been a longtime listener, you know how much mental health means to us.
Mental health actually plays a role in many horror films, especially the final girl subgenre. Whether it's Nancy facing her nightmares and defeating Freddy, or Sydney taking out Ghostface to overcome the trauma of and avenge her mother's death. Not only are horror movies a huge comfort to Casper and I, so is putting our mental health first. And if you agree and you're searching for professional services, let BetterHelp be your guide.
BetterHelp will connect you with a licensed therapist who can help you start your journey of self-awareness and discovery. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be flexible and convenient for any type of schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get yourself matched up with a licensed therapist, and you can also switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Just like the final girls that triumph over evil, triumph over your trauma with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/DFWTO and save 10% off your first month when you sign up today. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DFWTO.
And remember, guys,
Don't
don't fuck
fuck
with
with
the
the
original.
original. Now let's get into the episode.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the DFW DF God DFWTO
You got it.
podcast. I am your host Casper,
And I'm your other host, Becky Grimlin.
here to bring you all things spooky on Wednesdays because
Wednesdays are for podcasts.
So guys, we have an exciting episode tonight where we actually had somebody reach out to us and ask them if we could review their film. It is a film called Evil Lurks on Tubi, and we ended up watching it and we both ended up loving it. And we are very excited to have the co-director, co-writer, sound man
He plays Harold in the film.
on his name is Chris Shearn, and we are very excited to have him on the podcast tonight.
How you guys doing?
We are doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, just had some, some food, and I'm ready to talk about evil stuff.
Awesome. Perfect. Sounds like a plan. That's what we do here.
That's what we do
So,
here.
Chris, we usually like to start out, this has kind of become synonymous with our interviews because our title and overall podcast was pretty heavily inspired by the movie Scream. It's one of Casper and I's favorite movies. So we always start off our interviews by asking, what is your favorite scary movie? And it doesn't necessarily have to be one movie. It could be a film series. I usually can't narrow it down to one movie, so I typically tell people I like the Scream franchise and the Halloween franchise as a whole. So, what is your favorite scary movie?
Oh man.
I know it's hard to narrow down.
It's hard to narrow down scary movies when you pretty much watch them all the time. I can probably say I guess I'm kind of old school with the stuff that I watch. Obviously I think the first Nightmare on Elm Street is one of my movies that still kind of holds some things with me as far as fear and dreams people come into your nightmares. So the very first Friday the 13th, I mean, the first Nightmare on Elm Street.
I can say something recently.
I'm probably gonna put this in my top 10 because I still feel like people can still make horror movies legendary at this point in time. But Hereditary is probably one of my all-time favorite horror movies, just because of the family atmosphere and how nuts it gets at the end of that movie. So that movie always grabs me. As far as something that kind of made me feel uneasy. And, you know, obviously the typical The Shining and, you know, Rosemary's Baby. And, it's hard for me to say which, you know, what is my favorite scary movie. Because I've watched so many. It's a movie called Inside. It came out in 2007. It's a French horror movie.
Mm-hmm. That movie is fucked up.
That movie grabs me. And
well, because that really happened, though. Mm-hmm. Didn't that really happen?
Yeah, based on a true story.
That really happened. And I found out, I knew the true story because I think they interviewed the lady on Dr. Phil or something. So I knew about the story before. I didn't watch the movie in 2000. I watched it. I'm a late one usually with movies. I'm the one that watches them like 5 or 10 years typically after they come out. Not all the time, but that was one I watched. Maybe I want to say like 10 years ago or so, knowing the story, I was like, oh boy, oh
yeah, that movie sat with me for a minute.
So as I'm thinking about it, that movie, as far as at this current state, you know, current time, if I watch that movie, I'm gonna feel some kind of way about it.
Yeah. Anything that sits with you is something. Anything that gets in your head, makes you think. Also something that I really appreciated getting into the film we're gonna be talking about tonight, Evil Lurks, that you worked on and were Harold in the film, a pretty main central character, is any movie that touches on, and we named quite a few, I think even Nightmare on Elm Street could hold true to this, definitely Hereditary, any movie that deals with fighting with your inner demons and outer demons, if that makes sense. Kind of that juxtaposition of, you know, we all have demons that we fight, we all have things from our past or things currently going on that we're fighting internally amongst ourselves, or just anxiety, depression, mental health, all that kind of thing. But then taking that and putting that with actual demons, like the idea of a real or a demonic force or some type of evil negative force out there is always a really interesting concept in film that I've loved. And I think, I definitely think Nightmare on Elm Street could touch with that, because you look at Nancy, her mother, you know, dad being a cop, parents divorced, mom's an alcoholic. Then you bring in the whole, you know, Freddy aspect to it. I think that was probably one of my early introductions into that concept and specifically horror films that I've always loved, that I've always enjoyed.
I think that's why I love psychological paranormal movies the most, because of that psychological moment, but you also have an actual paranormal aspect going on at the same time, and I love that.
Yeah. For sure. No, go ahead, you're fine.
I'm sorry. I mean, especially with, you know, with what we try to achieve with Evil Lurks, I mean, a lot of what guys just pointed on, that definitely brought a lot of that aspect. We have the supernatural, the kind of, you know, reality of, you know, things that go tragically in your life. I mean, that's horror in itself. That's the scariest thing. That's the scariest horror you can find. You see guts and stuff spilled on TVs is part of the routine of horror. So it's funny, it's fun. You have a good time with it, but when someone, you know, loses a loved one or loses a child and all that stuff, that's the ultimate horror. But
Because it's real life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Real life horror.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's funny because I try to stay away. I don't like real life. I like when I watch horror movies. It's fun and it's enjoyable. Watching Terrifier, that was fun.
I agree.
But for some reason, I create movies. The things I want to create kind of goes into a. I'm intrigued by people's minds anyway, so I make those kind of movies. And you know, obviously, with the things that happen in Evil Lurks, there's a lot of reality that goes on. But then we mix it up with the supernatural as well. But even though I like to stay away from reality, I still gravitate to the mind of things that can tragically happen to someone. But it's still in the movie, so it's still kind of like okay. But I don't know. I feel like I'm better at trying to figure that out within the horror realm than I am with just being just senseless blood and guts and whatever. That stuff is fun to me, but that's not the stuff I really want to try to create. So even though Evil Lurks is a deeper movie, I'm hoping people still have fun with it. You know, it's not really a fun movie, but I don't know.
Well, there's parts in it, I will say, especially, I watched it several, I watched it several times in preparation. I took notes. There are parts in it, like, there's parts in the dialogue that I think break that up, that I was also going to ask you this, if there was any inspiration of, like, 80s horror, especially, like, 80s slashers, because there's so much campiness in the dialogue of a lot of those movies, especially the Friday the 13th movies. There's so much campy dialogue that sort of breaks up
the seriousness
yeah. And then the horrific nature of the murders when Jason is killing people, even though those are always awesome kills. But was that inspirational in any way to the dialogue in the film to sort of break up those more serious moments by making it kind of campy?
Well, I mean, certain parts that kind of, I would say more awkward than campy, but I think a lot of stuff that between Erica and Rich, the creepy neighbor.
Yes.
I think when they started getting in, when she came to the house and things started happening with them having conversations, I think our intentions was to make that awkward as hell.
Well, rightfully so.
She's like, you think I'm pretty, right? Think I'm pretty? Like, when she's like, yeah, I want you to kill my parents. Like, what? Like, he was confused. He was creepy and confused.
Right? Like, I love how she was like, oh, yeah, that was the last time you saw me? Okay.
that whole scene was, that goal was to make that as light. Because, I mean, here's the thing. The guy, you know, we don't make it obvious. He ain't like, look, the guy's into a 15-year-old girl. You can obviously tell. But we're not trying to be like, oh he's going to have pictures and be like kind of pervy about it. He's just kind of a weird dude.
That was so well done to not take it that far. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just like, oh, he's just weird. Like, you didn't have to take it that, you know, he's already creepy. You're feeling that enough. Like, the scene where he comes to the house and like, oh, I was supposed to work on your computer. And after she just got into a fight when he was like licking his lips.
Oh my God. I actually busted out laughing. I was like, this
that
dude
made me
is
laugh
no.
so hard.
I was like, I'm uncomfortable, but also that was great.
So I want to tell you a little bit, you know, real quick about that. So the guy who played Rich is Bill D. Russell. Bill, he's been around for a very long, he's kind of like, he's actually in a Puppet Master movie, so.
He looks so familiar, okay.
He's been around for years. He's like, his claim to fame was even a Blockbuster commercial. He was in that Blockbuster documentary.
I love it.
and he played in he's done a lot of independent films. He does a lot of comedies and, you know, dramas and he's done a lot of horror, so. Bill is a great dude. He'll also be in my next film, which, you know, he plays a interesting guy, but you know, a little more eccentric. But Bill, when he auditioned for the part, you know, like, cool, because everybody was auditioning, they was just like kind of slimy and creepy, like, hey, little girl, you know. I was like, nah, man, we need somebody who's kind of like still kind of, you know, approachable. You know, still he seems safe, but something's off about him. And also, I was obviously, you saw him wearing the Hawaiian shirt. So I'm like, you got a Hawaiian shirt? She's like, yeah, got two of them. I'm like, cool, bring those. So when he got the part, he started doing his dialogue. And all of a sudden, he started doing this lip thing, like licking his lip. And I was like, wait, hold on. Do you realize what you was doing? Like, what? I said, you was like licking your lips. Oh, like, yeah, that's kind of, I just felt like this guy do this weird thing with his lip. And I was like, all right, man, we're gonna keep it in. So when he did it, which is like, cause it was creepy and it was creepy funny. It was like, mm-hmm. It wasn't as, you could like do it slow and it's like so fast where you just gotta look, like take a second look, like, oh, did he just do something weird? And I think that added to the character. Cause right, I want to, when those parts, if I'm thinking the parts that you guys laughed at, those are the parts where you're like, yes, you know, cause we didn't want to be, especially for that character in those parts, we don't want to be obvious and be like, okay, it's a creepy guy, he's into this teenager, blah, blah, blah. We just wanted to make it still kind of all right as far as watching it and being funny and kooky. It's still weird and awkward. And so people say, yeah, he was kind of a creepy character. And it's like, yeah, that's the point. But right. it was still comical. It was still funny and awkward. And then obviously when, you know, things happened within him, between him and Erica, it was awkward and weird, but then it got kind of intense. But it was just like, so that was, yeah, so that was kind of, that was kind of the thing we wanted to try to do. Because the movie is off. The movie is awkward. The movie it has a kilteredness to it. And it's pretty much like how we think and how we go through life and our brains and all these different things that we scramble into our head. And, you know, obviously the main point is Kimberly and the things she went through in her life. But how we shot it, how we color graded, and then how we had these angles where it seemed like the people with the close-ups, where it seemed like they was looking at the screen, looking at you, that was kind of like the whole purpose, certain things being blurry. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you don't have a fresh, clear vision of things. It's like you get blurry. So we was trying to be super deep about it. So making it like that, that was kind of the whole vibe. But yeah, even with the Pulp Fiction, when they were talking about the dialogue with the Pulp Fiction in the bar, you know, that was kind of another kind of funny thing that was kind of, you know, not as serious as all the other stuff.
I did giggle at that part. Sense.
That was pretty funny. Especially since Pulp Fiction is one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. So I did.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah. That's why I put it in there. Yeah.
That was hilarious. That was funny. You actually, so in that, also in that Chat with the Bat, or you had interviewed, I watched your interview, Chat with the Bat, on YouTube. I wanted to touch on that too, that scene between Harold and Kimberly being so intense, and the camera angle being as intense as it was, that was done on purpose. That was supposed to be that awkward. And
oh, yeah.
And it made total sense knowing that now, especially knowing everything that was going on at the time within Harold, going back to that fighting your inner demon sort of thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. That it was supposed to be that awkward.
Yeah. Did you notice how he was blinking? How like
mm-hmm.
heavy he was blinking?
Oh, for sure. We actually talked about this before we called that Casper and I both have known someone in our past that had facial tics.
Yeah.
So if you know someone has that, you just think like, oh, it's no big, you know, it's no big deal. But yeah. If you've never noticed it before and someone starts doing that, you're like, what are they doing?
Right.
Like, yeah, it was
Well, what I noticed about it is that he wasn't always doing it.
Exactly.
And that's why I was like, well, if he's got a tick, he would be doing it more than just at this particular moment in time.
But you started to notice it ramp up more, especially right before Harold and Kimberly have their private session together.
Mm-hmm.
Where the shit hits the proverbial fan at that point.
And the reason for, I mean, it pretty much happens at the bar, and then it pretty much happens when she comes to the office, and she opens the door and the door closes, and then right. when he finally lets her in, you can kind of see him kind of still getting his eyes sorted out, because obviously something was happening when she was trying to open up the door to go into the room. For the bar scene, a lot of the blinking was like, if he kept his eyes still, for some reason she'll probably see that red glow kind of seeping into his eyes. So he was just kind of, he was trying to hide that glow, that red glow that was in his eyes. So as he was blinking like that, it seemed like it was coming through. Cause once again, it's a death, but Harold was already in another place. Harold was already possessed by something. So, especially with how the camera was set up and how it was angled, where, he was just kind of like, especially when he was like, when he's like, do you want to have, have any children? Do you want any? And a lot of people say, man, when he said, do you want any? I did not care for that conversation.
Especially as two women, I'd have been like, excuse
me? I was like, he's being creepy. If anything, Harold was being creepier in that scene than Rich was being with Erica. I was like, what do you mean? Do you want any? You said that weird. I don't like the way you said that.
So the way he said it, because right when he said, oh shit, I said that wrong. And all of a sudden his eyes started getting, he was like blinking again. But so his whole thing was like, do you have any kids? Do you want any kids? Like, is that something you want in your future? That was the whole thing. Now, me saying, do you want any? Obviously, it was awkward, but that's what I'm saying. When we're talking about awkward and off-kilter type conversations, I think her mind was like, I don't want to be rude because I'm like going to smack this dude for him to just, like, do you want any? Like, what?
Right.
But if we would have overwritten and say, well, do you have any interest in having any children? You like kids, you want to have, whatever. You can ask that question without it being whatever. But, Harold saying what he said, his brain was just kind of like not thinking like, oh, shit, that didn't sound right. That sounded weird. But so, a lot of the tick stuff was pretty much him. If he kept his eyes steady, that redness will eventually seep in, and he didn't want her to. I'm not gonna say I feel sorry for Harold, because Harold was in this bad place and he was a bad dude, and we obviously didn't overly explain why he was possessed by this entity, but I don't know, he was fighting his demons as well. But the movie, right. everybody's fighting their demons.
So exactly.
Tiffany is fighting her demons because she adopted Kimberly's, daughter, Erica, and she was trying to keep things away from Erica and treating much, betraying her as a bad person. And Kimberly wasn't a bad person.
No.
So, and I think Sean was in the middle because he was the good guy. He was the only guy you kind of cared about, where it's like, for the most part, because he was trying to be a good father. To Erica, but everybody was fighting their demons in some way in the movie. So that's why, evil lurks all around us. It's kind of the metaphor. And then when Evil Lurks came out, then we got screwed. So we wasn't on top of the IMDb thing anymore.
I've wondered that if you guys, because I personally have not seen When Evil Lurks yet.
Oh my God, it's an,
so,
it's good. It's
good. Casper has, but, I wondered that if that sort of, I always, you know what, that was actually something I've always wondered, because this isn't the first, I think we've seen it many, many, many times where I think you could just have so many titles to so many movies that there are a lot of movies that will run into, like there's a movie called Host, but then there's also a Korean film called The Host, and both of them are vastly different movies. Yeah, I think that I think that that's just the thing that people run into because it's like, well, there's just so many titles you can. There's only so many things you can choose from.
And I like the title of Evil Lurk because it's very simple. It's not, I mean, it's like Evil Lurk, you know, it's
Yes.
straightforward. You try to go into the mind of Kimberly's brain as she's walking into this hallway of her demented emotions and life is coming unglued as the red hits the light, part one.
I really like how you did that.
Yeah.
I really like how when she first got hypnotized and you went into her brain, she was like opening doors to look at memories. I loved that.
And I've seen that concept done in other films because
Yeah.
it's also very metaphorical.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is interesting because a lot of people, you know, some criticism of people will talk to us about with the cover, you know, it has the skeleton face shushing and all that stuff. But people are like, well, a lot of this, the movie pretty much focus on, y'all don't even say Shush Man, because again, the name of the entity is called the Shush Man. But we never mentioned the name Shush Man. But people focus on, a lot on that hallway because everything is kind of triggered within that onto what's going on in the main character Kimberly's life. So if people always, you know, some people would tell us like, yeah, the cover, the main cover of the movie kind of doesn't match what the movie's all about. But when you see that hallway stuff, you know, big shout out to my guy Nick Grove, because he did all the compositing for that hallway. We shot that on green screen in my basement.
That is
So
awesome.
I
Wow,
mean,
that's
it was
awesome.
that was those sequences were very well done. Those sequences
Thanks so much.
were incredible. I mean, they set the whole thing. It really set it up to
Thank
where
you so much.
her mind, yeah, like you're actually in her mind. You're in
Yeah.
there with her.
I thought it was really interesting too when she first walks into the room with Harold and she erased the number 22. And
There was a
then
lot of
you
significance
actually
with that
find out
number.
she was in a psych, like her psych room was 22.
22.
And then it changed to 4. I was like, oh, look at that. It's 22. Huh. How about that?
Numbers, even with the hallway, you know, even with the hallway stuff, all the numbers played a role. Some things, some things was like, it was significant of, you know, some of the numbers had a meaning of hope. Some of the numbers had a meaning of death. Some of the numbers had a meaning of life. So yeah, when things got real weird, like honestly, you know, if we talk about the story. Amanda Winston, who played Kimberly, her character, you know, she had, you know, her character had a miscarriage, and when she looked at, you know, at first, you know, she was about to, you know, she was pregnant, and then she lost the baby. So when it cut to her looking at a door and the number, that number represented death, and then that's when you saw the scene that was. I had to cut it shorter because it was a lot longer. Because it was like, all right, let me cut this short. So when she was in the bathroom and she realized she had cramps and stuff, that was a significant of her, you know, losing her child.
Right.
And then before that, you seen the number on the door for the hallway in the hallway section on the door. And yeah, I mean, that's horror. I mean, you hear this crazy, this ambience music and just how creaky and just kind of just, you know, how it sounds and, you know, a lot of that stuff. Like, exactly, I score the music as well, and I'm the music supervisor, so I take a lot of found sounds, and then I put them, you know, I put them in the computer, mess with them, manipulate them, and do stuff. So some of the sounds, if you go back to her in the bathroom and she's in pain, some of the sounds are samples of like babies crying, and I play it and I low
Oh.
tune it, and then I kind of crack it up to kind of like cut it up to make it sound real. Like it's fucked up. I'm sorry, it's fucked up. But my music, how I compose with the picture, I always like to dance with them. So it is a bunch of babies crying, and then I detune it to make it lower, and then I cut it up to make it like, you know, just kind of, and then I add all this distortion to the sounds. And because, you know, these things are happening inside of her, and this, and that's, and the music is how she's feeling right now. So,
I actually think that's actually rather brilliant to do something like that, to take.
It almost reminds me of Timberland in a little way. Yeah. If you know anything about how Timberland, produced
it. Yeah, like that's such a great idea. Like, yeah, it's fucked up, but at the same time, it makes perfect sense for what you're trying to convey in the scene. So I think that's such a smart idea to do something like that.
Yeah.
And I love music. Both of us are just as much music fans, all different genres of music, and how music, as well as film, and then if a film is scored, I always appreciate movies that are scored well, because the music, this, the tone of a scene, if the right music is in there, or just the right sound or whatever, the way that that permeates into your body, it's like you're getting all of it. You're getting all of the scene.
The music can really set a tone for a scene. For sure. It can completely change a scene depending on what the music is.
For sure.
Yeah.
So to do something like what you just said is a perfect example of exactly how to set a tone for a scene like that. So,
and a lot of the songs in the movie, I know one song in particular, especially going back and watching it again, that I really like is when you're introduced to Kim's dad. The scene with him where he's like drinking the water and grabs the that song fits so well into that scene with him.
And also,
so, real quick story though, so when we was coming up with that scene, we was listening to Johnny Cash Hurt.
Oh God!
That's insane.
Yes, because I literally thought
this kind of sounds
all
like
the Johnny Cash vibes the whole time. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, yes. Yep.
So, my engineer John Magnificus, I compose things, but I have a bunch of musician friends who are like, I need a cello player, I need a guitar player, I need a piano player. So he came up with the music. And I was the rest of the sing, because I'm also a singer. You've seen the podcast with Al. Yeah,
right.
I'm also a singer in the band. So I was originally going to sing it, but I was like, man, I need somebody with a dirtier voice. So I called up my friend, Josh, and he's a musician as well. And I said, hey, I got this song, and I need you to record it. So when John recorded the guitar and stuff, we got Josh into the studio to record the lyrics and all that stuff. So yeah, we was looking for that Johnny Cash version of a Nine Inch Nails song, and then we put that in there. So yeah,
that was perfect.
I'm proud of that song. We got it in. It took us a day to record it, and knocked it out. So that was pretty dope.
That was a great song. It really was. And it really fit that scene. I mean, it really did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I got all the,
I got the Johnny Cash vibes too.
Oh, for sure.
I have to give you props too, because the twists in this film, I'm like you, we both are like you. We've watched so many fucking horror movies. It's absolutely insane.
Yes.
So to be able to actually shock me with a twist is very rare to do. And when he opened the door and she said, Dad, I said, what the fuck?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
I was like, he's your dad? Oh, God.
Because you're like, what is, especially when, you know, because they're flashing back to the scene of when he originally found her.
Yep.
And the guy asks him, do you know her? And
I just kind of figured he probably had ran into her before. Like, she's had trouble before.
Right.
He's a cop that's known her, like, seen her before. I never in a million years thought
Even though, you know, you're, because you see him in the bar before, and I think that's kind of a cop trope.
Yeah.
That especially detectives, they're alcoholics. And I think, and, you know, and then if you flash back, now knowing that though, and then you flash back to the beginning, where Kimberly's fighting with her boyfriend after the miscarriage, and like, oh, you're sounding like your dad when you drink, and it's like, oh, got it.
Well, what was funny is I even told my fiance, I was like, I don't know why he just won't let her have one night of drinking. She just lost it. I said, unless her dad was an alcoholic, and then lo and behold.
Or her mom, or whatever. Anybody that I personally, in my family, there's familial ties with alcohol addiction. So yeah, I mean it passes down. Mm-hmm. It does. That is a yeah. real thing. So
you guys are so awesome.
Thank you.
Seriously, like I'm kind of getting goosebumps right now because you get it. You get it.
Thank you.
Put time in to really break everything. Because like I'm real. People call this movie psychological art house, weird, psychedelic, whatever. But like, yeah, here's the bottom line. We're not gonna win, you know, Academy Awards and, you know, be millionaires and stuff. Like, we knew what we were doing when we made this movie. We knew it was a movie that you needed to really digest. And what you guys are doing right now, it just kind of makes me feel warm inside. And we put 5 years into this movie.
Wow.
Wow.
This is all voluntary. We spent less than $1,000 to make this movie because everybody volunteered because they cared about what we were trying to say.
Wow. That's so awesome.
So that warms my heart that you guys really broke this down. Because I've been doing a lot of more interviews and podcasts and stuff like that. But what you guys are talking about right now, how you really broke everything down, it's like they get it. And that's great. So thank you.
Sure. The pleasure is ours, for sure.
Yeah,
man.
Well, thank you.
We loved watching this movie.
I know this is your first time probably, like, obviously you might not have listened to any of our podcasts before, which is perfectly fine, but we've talked about it before. we don't watch movies. We never really have. If there's an underlying metaphor or an underlying reason of a film, we find it.
We are not surface level.
We don't.
With film. I mean, that's one thing my husband kind of, that he applauds me and is also kind of like, why we're sort of hard to watch movies together. Because
yeah.
I love that we've been together for many, many, many years, and I love that man with all my heart. But we definitely, he is a, depending on the films. Now, some psychological stuff he can get into. He likes movies with twists, but he's more surface level, where I'm like, I'm in it. I'm deep. I'm in the bowels of this.
I'm like, what movie. are they trying to say here?
Yeah.
What is the actual meaning of what's going on? Like, that's one of our favorite directors is Mike Flanagan. We love how he is just so psychological.
Yeah, that guy is.
And I love.
And this newer crop of horror directors. Cause I'm a 80s baby, 90s kid.
Same.
80s. So I came in early with the, you know, with Wes Craven and John Carpenter. Yeah. And I mean, you know, and the greats of the greats, the Mount Rushmores. Yeah. But when James Wan came on the scene, he changed everything. You know, Jordan Peele,
Ari Aster,
Ari Aster with Hereditary,
Mike Flanagan.
And now we've got Mike Flanagan and these new crop of horror directors. It's like, you guys are really, especially Jordan Peele, because he gives so much to independent, filmmakers, which we love, you know, that you have, you know, you got to start somewhere. We were just talking about this. I watched The Blair Witch Project. I saw that movie when I snuck into a dollar theater and saw that movie. That's how broke of a teenager I was. I didn't even have I couldn't even find the quarter. I'm searching through the payphones trying to get an extra quarter to get a ticket to see this movie. I had to sneak in through the back door. That theater isn't even there anymore. The mall is like, not even there anymore. I'm so old.
You are not.
And, I'm not. I'm turning 40 this year. That's not.
I was like, you're still a baby. You
old. But seeing that movie, like that was just like, what? You know, I mean, that was something that, so I think with, it also opened a door to people. I think for a long time, horror films were very surface level, especially 80s slashers. It was very surface level. And I think that a lot of filmmakers were sort of afraid to go there. I think some of them did have a deeper meaning, but essentially people just saw them for what they were. It was all very surface level. But I think that was something that, especially horror, because there are, the one thing that I love that I will scream this from the top of my lungs till the day I die, why I love horror so much is because as a genre, it has so many subgenres that you can watch how anybody can't be a horror fan because you can pick from a litany from thousands of different subgenres of movies. I have people that don't like slashers, but they're like, but I love Silence of the Lambs. And it's like, well, that's a horror film. But I like Jaws. Well, that's a horror film. You know, there's so many to choose from, and so many filmmakers out there that have their own visions and ways that and things that they put into films, which as the type of movie watchers that we are, we have been craving this. And I think a lot, and other people have been too. I think it shows.
That's why we're such a big advocate for indie films,
Oh, for
because I'm
sure.
like,
But I also love how you put it on the chat with the bad interview with Al, where you were like, this wasn't low budget, this was no budget, this was like micro budget.
I mean,
Was perfect.
we scrapped and scraped. I think the Shush Man outfit costs more than anything else that we pay for.
Hey, listen, I worked at Spirit Halloween for like 3 weeks. Those freaking costumes are
Yeah,
expensive,
they are.
man.
Oh,
So
absolutely. It was a Kylo Ren outfit that I took to a tailor to make it work on my body. And then we got so then we got this then we got this mask. Like we got one of these rubber foam latex kind of skeleton mask that we painted it. And then when we was messing with it, we was like, man, this don't look this. And we cut it up, you know, because it was just kind of not looking right. And we cut it, he was like, "Oh man, this is looking like Phantom of the Opera." When you look and watch the movie, you don't really see Shush Man's face really close up. And then if you do see certain things that's happening, what I had to do was I took another face and I manipulated it, you know, in Photoshop, and then I put that onto the face. So I'm like, I can't move around, and I composite that face onto my face as a shush, because I played the Shush Man character as well. I played a lot of the shadow figures. I played the Shush Man, and then I played Harold. So I was kind of all over. You would never see those behind the scenes of me playing a shadow because I was in green screen. I just wearing my tighty whities.
Like,
And
no behind the scenes of that.
it was like, let me shrink this stomach up a little.
Love
But no, it was but yeah, we had to do a lot of different things to kind of play around with the one thing that was helpful is we're technically sound. Like I know how to video edit, I know how to color grade when I need to.
Nice.
I score my own films, I sound design, and I just had a and it was just a lot of people who believed in what we were trying to do and they wanted to be a part of it. And it was like, all right, cool. I mean, can't pay you, we can feed you, but we can't pay you. And yeah, we had 29 speaking roles, 14 locations, and three and a half reshoots.
Because I that was something like the different locations. I thought, wow, this is really awesome. Because you know, the fact that you were even able to do it like in an actual doctor's office, like that was great because that made it more believable to those scenes. Like that was really awesome.
And the assistant that was for the pregnancy scene, for the birth scene, the assistant, she's an actual nurse. So she was there while we was there. I said, like, you want to be in the movie? She's like, oh, okay, just be yourself.
That's
Like
cool.
we didn't give her any dialogue. We just say, just be yourself.
Yeah,
So
if this
that's
was
kind of what
actually
happened.
happening.
Oh, and also, big props to my 3-year-old. When you hear the baby birth, that was actually my son at 1 month old. I recorded his voice, so that wasn't something I found at a like digital library. That was actually him crying.
Oh, that's so
I
precious.
love it. That's so cute.
So as he was crying, you know, my wife's like, "What are you doing? Why you got a mic towards his face? He's crying." I'm like, "Because I gotta get it."
You're
Because I'm weird.
like,
Well, I
can use this.
well, I mean, South
I can't.
Park, if a lot of people don't know, in South Park, the voice of his oh my brain, Kyle's brother, the one that was from Canada, that's I think Trey Parker's daughter that he just follows around with a microphone. And like, as she got older, he like put her in the studio. Like she's doing the little like kick the baby. Like that's her. Like that's oh his dog. And I'm like, that is brilliant. That I is brilliant.
Yes.
Like give your kids an acting credit. There you go.
If you watch the credits, my other son, I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. My other son, he's credited as making music. So we was just playing around. So he was banging on the piano and I was recording it. And then I took what he did and actually put, so like some of the, like the part where Kimberly kind of, once again, she lost another child and she started drinking.
Right.
And she was going, a lot of the piano stuff in that scene was my son, my 6-year-old.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Going back and
like, you would never know because it sounds like it was fitted for that, you know what I mean? Right. Like it was composed to fit professionally composed to fit that scene.
Yeah, you just hit the right notes and I'm like, all right, cool. That make you know, like cool. So if the movie ever make money, I'll give him his 25 cents.
Put this towards the college fund, kid.
Yeah, here's a dollar. Go and see
Blood Witch. Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
Oh my God, that's great.
I have to bring this up because it's so central to the film, and I don't. And that was something else Casper and I were talking about that I don't think I've ever, in the litany of horror films we've seen, I don't know if I've ever seen the concept or as much of the concept of hypnosis. How you can. I have never been hypnotized. It's actually something I've never wanted to. I think sleeping dogs need to lie. I think there's just certain things in my brain. If my brain said, yo, Becky, we're just going to like shut that down. Good
we're
looking out.
Leave it.
I'm like, good looking out, brain, because I don't need to remember that. So hypnosis for me is always something that I was like, I believe in it. I know there's some people that think it's bunk. I believe it's real. And I'm just like, oh, hell no. Plus, we both have seen The Fourth Kind.
Yep.
And I don't need to
is what turned me off
of hypnosis. Yep. Because if I have been abducted, I don't want to know. Keep that in the nether regions. Keep that way, way back there.
I'm like, I also don't want my jaw dislocated.
Don't want that to happen either.
No, I'm good.
But the whole concept of being so vulnerable when you're hypnotized, but then also we've talked a lot about, too, how vulnerability can leave you susceptible to, if people believe in this, because we do different things on our podcast and we have talked about real life possessions. If you believe in that, how when you are at your most vulnerable, say in the case of Amityville, where Ronald DeFeo was a drug addict, and if you believe that he was really possessed and killed his family, that he would be susceptible to that and vulnerable to that because he was on drugs. So the concept of being so vulnerable in a state of hypnosis, I really loved that. Where did that come from?
Well, the original concept, when we was talking about different things, my wife and I went to, and it wasn't, we didn't go to like a therapy, hypnotherapy session. We went to this kind of more fun, magic kind of setup where the guy was hypnotizing people, whatever. So we went to this thing and, you know, he was like, hey, you need some volunteers. We're going to get up, you know, see if we can hypnotize you and see who's, you know, who can get hypnotized, who can't or whatever. So obviously I raised my hand and he saw me and I was like, ooh. So I got up on stage. And long story short, hypnosis is more of a state of mind than it is about someone who has a power to hypnotize.
I believe that.
Because there were six people there, and he got rid of four of them. He's like, all right, you're not trying. You're not even trying to let your mind go, so I get up. So I did. He said, look at the red light. All that stuff at the beginning of the movie is stuff I stole from what I experienced. But he's like, all right, focus on the red light. Let your mind go, relax, boom, boom, boom. Pretend you're on the beach. All right, imagine that beach is cold. Imagine there's snow on the ground on that beach. So when I was doing all these things, I let my mind go, and I felt cold because I felt like I was on a beach, and I felt like I was on a cold beach. So it's all about your state of mind. They have the power for, you know, you know, so to speak, to get you in the mood, get you into a state of unconsciousness, a state of just relaxation. So that's their part. Now, between that and going on YouTube and watching therapy sessions, especially the main one where we go into the hallway, I got that. That was like a 29, I remember it was like a 29-minute session from this guy and this girl. She was going through a bad breakup and blah, blah, blah. And I watched the whole 29 minutes. And then when she woke up from the unconscious, she looked at him and just gave him a big hug and cried. And just like, because he kind of put her at ease and kind of put her in a place. He didn't snap his fingers. You can do the snap fingers and all that stuff.
Right.
We obviously did that. But a lot of it, you know, I guess the snaps is more as part of the triggering aspect of, I'm sorry about that, the triggering aspects of what, of them falling into that state of consciousness. So that helps with the snapping and all that stuff.
Right, exactly. But, which
you
I know, think
you snap your fingers and then you close your eyes. There's conversation. They have the conversation. So
yes.
Yeah. So
and I think if people have seen that, like if they've not themselves either been like, because I also think there's a, I think there is a bit of a difference with the like sort of Vegas show hypnosis versus like an actual psychotherapy hypnosis session, which I think is more of what was happening in the film, which was very believable because if you've ever seen anything like that, you have to like how his thing, and we see it in the beginning and at the end when he says you're not breathing, you're not focusing on your breathing.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
Yep.
Because it's something, it's not only part of the relaxation, it's part of the focus, it's part of the whole thing.
Think about this. Here's an example. When you work out, like if you're doing push-ups or you're doing something, if you're doing push-ups and you're not breathing as you're going up and down, you're probably going to hurt yourself.
Right.
You're not breathing. Your body is stiff. Because when you're not breathing, your body is stiff. Like when you're dead and you're not breathing, your body is still. So it's like you're not moving.
Exactly.
So when you're doing push-ups, you need to start like one, two, you know, breathing. So if you're not breathing, then you think everything's just stuck in one place. So you have to breathe. You got to let your mind go. And when you do that, that's when that things open up. That's when the doors open up. That's when the floodgates open up to go into the mind to talk to have these conversations about these things that's going on with you. So you gotta breathe. You gotta breathe.
Like, exactly.
If you work out and you don't breathe, you're gonna find a way to hurt yourself. Something's gonna happen. Something's gonna get pulled.
I do yoga. Yeah, I do yoga, and that's always a big thing. Before that, I learned like when I had to take physical therapy. That's always something. Any stretches, any kind of physical activity, yoga especially, yoga is a huge one where they constantly are telling you to focus on your breathing because it's all a part of not only the physical, it's the mental also.
Yeah. And honestly, if the mental ain't working well, you're gonna have a hard time getting the physical to work.
Yeah, because and if you're not motivated, many, 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 many different things. One thing in particular that I wanted, I got a lot of going back to the design of the man and how a lot of people like put a lot of emphasis on that character in particularly. How I actually liked that you didn't see much of his face. The part with Erica when Erica is starting to become possessed. I was getting a lot of 80s vibes from that because first of all the like shadow figures, ghost, I was immediately ghost. Like every time I saw those I kept thinking about ghost. It made me think about goosebumps a lot. Yeah, you said goosebumps. I immediately went to ghost. I was like
hey. One thing, I'm sorry to cut you up. But when you said ghost, remember the scene when Jonah asked when Jeremiah asked Kimberly to marry him?
Yes.
And he said, I love your face. And he said, ditto.
Ditto. He did say, right. He did say ditto. Oh my God.
And that was from the movie Ghost.
Well,
That is a great film. I haven't watched it in a while because it makes me sob. which, if you don't cry at the end of Ghost, you have no soul. I don't know how that movie would make some.
Oh, that movie's great. But yeah, but like you said, with the shadows and stuff, so a lot. Yeah, like that. That was one of the parts when he's like, "Ditto," because Patrick Swayze said it. He never said, "I love you" back when he said, "To Demi Moore," like "Ditto." So
perfect. So, yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of like when you talked to when you mentioned Ghost. That was kind of another, you know, thing about that.
And I got a lot of Phantasm vibes with specifically the scene with Erica in the chair, like R.I.P. to Angus Scrimm. But just the whole thing with like the hand, I mean, I know that when I first saw that, cause that was again, one of those movies that I saw way too young. I have so many movies like that. I saw Phantasm way too young. And that whole scene with the hands coming down, I just, that was so visceral for me because it brought me back to seeing that for the first time in and just how much that, for whatever reason, really scared me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can show you guys my like picture books. I make these picture books, and I always get these pictures from different movies because I'm trying to look at the image of what I'm looking for. I don't know. I don't write storyboards, and I did a storyboard with Harold Tack and Kimberly, and it's comical. I mean, that's not the scene ain't comical, but the storyboard is hilarious. It's just like, God, this is terrible looking, but it was effective. So I take pictures, and I put them in folders, and I get pictures off the internet of different movies and different angles, and color palettes and stuff of different movies, and I put them in a folder. And Phantasm was one of the movies that I did that for. So that was I watched a lot of 70s and 80s movies when I was, you know, working on the concept and the visuals for Evil Lurks. I don't know if you heard of Dario Argento.
Oh, for sure. Spirit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Suspiria. So, I love Suspiria. Yeah. The first time I saw Suspiria, I was hooked.
Not a fan of the remake, but I did like the original.
I actually really like the remake. I don't even think it's a remake. I think it's a reimagining.
Yeah, I had to watch it. Yeah. From. Yeah.
Yeah, but it just so happened the name is Suspiria. But I the color palettes of what the deep reds and the lights and the now everything was set up. And honestly, you know, the first opening sequence of the movie of Evil Lurks is the middle of the movie. So that was kind of, you know, I enjoyed doing that because, you know, I think people was like, okay, this is interesting. We got all this crazy stuff, and all of a sudden it goes into this. But yeah, that was the middle of the movie when she was in the room and he was kind of like seducing her, or just kind of like she's in the chair and he's like just looking at her or whatever. So that was definitely Dario Argento inspired. And then, like you said, you know, Phantasm, just trippy, crazy, chaos, spooky stuff. And
very much so.
A piano piece of music within that chaos was kind of, that worked. I like that.
Very 80s. You could tell the movie took a lot of 80s. Inspirations from different, which again, if you're a horror fan and you see a horror movie that takes several different inspirations from several different movies, you appreciate that because that's something you're going to see. You're going to notice it. It's right off the bat. You're
and to me,
see
it's like a love letter from the actual director or writer of the film being like, I love this movie. So I'm taking my own spin and incorporating it in my movie. And I really like that.
And it cracks me up when people like, I don't watch movies when I make them all. I don't listen to music when I write my songs because I'll get heavily influenced. I'm like, why? Like, it makes your job easier. I'm like with you guys. Like, if we all three of us watch movies together, it'd probably be hilarious. And we'd probably be like, taking notes and like, that sound. We'd be like, ear by the screen. Or we'd be like, wait, rewind it. You got that person blink. Why they blink five times like that? So it's like, trust my wife is like multitask when she watches movies with me because she's on the phone. She'll get up and make something. And I'm just like, and then when I ask the questions, you know all the answers. I'm like, how the hell do you do that? Like, that's painful to just do all these things while I'm trying to watch a movie. But I watch movies to study. Like, I watched the Justice League. I watched the Justice League, Zack Snyder's version of the Justice League, and I took some of the lighting techniques of that and put that in Human Works. That wasn't my goal, but you gotta be in. I'm always inspired. It makes my
That's
job
amazing, easy. Though.
Watch a movie. Yeah.
Yep. Anytime I watch a movie, I sit down and watch. If I'm watching it for the first time, mind you, if I'm watching it for the first time or second time, I will actually sit down and, like, fully engage myself into it. Because I'm like, I don't want to miss anything. Because I'm like, I feel like if I miss, because it's happened before where I'll miss one thing and then I'm like 20 minutes later and I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, clearly I missed one itty bitty part that I shouldn't have. So then I have to restart it. So now it's like we've said before, like when we watch a movie, we digest.
And I appreciate that too, because I think it sort of gets people, you know, we're such a world now of even us amongst us that remember before we were attached to our cell phones, we're so inundated with it that I think if you can give yourself a moment to just put that phone away and get lost in a movie.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that there's people out there that still do that. I think that's really important, because I think that there's so many things that people are worried about attacking films now and not having movies. But to me, at the end of the day, I think that there's just going to be too many film goers out there that are just really not going to want something surface level, something that AI can just generate in 2.5 seconds. They want something that's real. They want something that has a meaning. They want something. And I think too, if you've been through because Evil Lurks touches so much on kind of at the heart of the movie, no matter, because we talked about that at the start of how this movie is left up to interpretation. Like, there's so many different people can get different ways of watching this, especially when you get to the end, that I think that it's always going to be important to have films like that that touch on that, because there's something about that. It's very human. It's very human when you can relate to a movie through shared trauma. Speaking of that, I also wanted to mention, so the fight sequence between Harold and Kimberly, afterwards, because there is the cut to 8 months later, and then with her being pregnant, and then her Tiffany was her name, that's who adopted Erica, her therapist, right, says that she was, you know, it's mentioned that she was raped. So I just want to say, as someone, because Catherine and I both talked about this, and as someone who is an assault survivor, that scene wasn't, if it was implied, it wasn't triggering in any way. And I think that that's something too, because like sometimes some assault scenes, I'm like,
they're a little bit too much.
Y'all, if this isn't pertinent to the story, this is just doing a little too much. And then coming from somebody who has any trauma from that, typically I'm like, I'm gonna fast forward through this real quick and then make it through the rest of the movie, because I don't need to sit with that. I'm just trying to enjoy this film. I almost took it as, and again, here we, you know, another 80s movie inspiration. The movie The Entity.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Barbara Hershey, because I actually got to meet her. She's amazing. And how, that's what I told Casper, like, it almost to me is if it was like it was demonically impregnated her. Not like a physical, but it was done in a way that you were like, and I mean, it like brought me back to The Entity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I don't know if you ever seen this movie called Irreversible.
Mm-hmm.
Or have heard of it.
I think I have.
I think I've heard of it. Who's
and he's I forgot his name, but he's a French filmmaker. He had a movie called Climax.
I've been wanting to see that, actually. Yeah. That's actually on my list to watch.
Yeah, and he did another movie called Into the Zone, something with, it was a very trippy movie. All right, so he did a movie called Irreversible. and it was a 9-minute one side rape scene.
That's the movie with Monica Bellucci, the actress from The Matrix. Yes. And I have seen that on horror movie list, and I'm like, nope, I'm not going to see that movie. I haven't watched it. And that's why, because I was like, no.
It's a 9-minute?
Monica Bellucci from The Matrix. Most people in American audiences know her from The Matrix.
Ooh, so. And it's one take. I'll pass on that, too.
Yeah, so that was brutal. Like even, you know, obviously I watch a lot of things that got some extreme. I mean, I watched the movie Martyrs, which is a brutal movie.
Yeah.
Torture and just nonstop. But to go on my point, there was no reason to try to, you know, have the movie be that way. Even talking with Amanda about the good life, we had a phone conversation before we went and talked about this scene. Not even trying to get like, no, it wasn't a matter of like, okay, gonna do this and make it more assault. Like, no, it was super. Yeah, it was supernatural. It was metaphorical. There were certain things that happened that we didn't need to do, obviously, things that was happening within just Man in the Shadows and stuff like that. Now, obviously, there's a lot of things we don't want to give away. Hopefully people watch the movie and stuff. So there's certain things that happen later in the movie. And we saw that move the part when she walks towards the car. And then when we cut back to that, and then certain things happen in that room. Mm-hmm. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep. It's insinuated enough.
Right. So that's what happened. That's what happened. And even with that, you saw certain things where you saw a little bit of wave going into one of the streets, and you can hear her voice.
Right.
And it was a speck of blood. If you really look at that scene, it was just this wave that kind of goes up into the sheet. You see a speck of blood on the wave of that scene when you go into that later part of the movie, when you see this other thing in this room and the red light and all that stuff. But we cut back to the rape. Like, these are things that's, you know, once again, she's hypnotized. These are things that happen. These are dark poetries of madness and chaos that's going through her mind. So there was no need to go into this crazy, you know, we're going to do this rape scene and blah blah blah. And it was what it was. When you see her legs shaking, or when you see like you see these things, and then you see how the music is very chunky and chaos, and then so when you look at all these things that happened within that, you know, there was no reason to add all of that shit to it, because a lot of stuff that was written in this movie was based on things that happened in, you know, our past, or things that happened, like, obviously, with certain things with, you know, a man, you know, with Kimberly and her, you know, relationship and miscarriage of babies. So those, unfortunately, are things that happened in my life, you know, with my wife and things we had to go through. But assault, those things happened. But there was no reason for me to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this, like this, and like that. And then, you know, cutting back to 80s stuff, you see some 80s. I've been watching, you see some 80s stuff. You're like, holy shit, this is brutal.
Yes.
I don't even go that far back to like, all right, I'm going to do that. Certain color palettes and how we wanted the look is one thing. But yeah, I was like, that was like, for me, it's like, I don't get anything out of that. That doesn't help. We know what we're trying to do with this movie and what we're trying to convey.
And it worked.
And it did. I mean, and I really really appreciate you not doing that, because I can watch anything in horror, but rape really bothers me.
As two women, and I think from someone who is a survivor of that, the fact that it didn't, because it didn't have to go there. You are 1,000% correct. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't have given anything to the film. It wouldn't have added anything to the film. There was enough implied and metaphorical that you were like, oh. And then I feel like that kept you even more into the film. Mm-hmm. It was more because it was so psychological. So that's how I took it. And it immediately made me think of The Entity. It immediately made me think of that. That it was all more of that her deep-seated trauma of something that happened in real life manifested itself into
the reality.
Right.
She built this thing into something bigger.
Yes.
Than what it should be. What it is a piece of shit. It's a fucking, am I saying that word right?
Abomination, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, it's the nastiness, the darkness, the shit of the world that we live in, unfortunately. And she, and the power was so overwhelming, it became a god-like demon spirit possession power to her. And like, she was so far gone with everything in her life, with the relationships, the father, the mother not being, the father, mother dying, obviously, and she created this atmosphere. And Dan Harrell's a piece of shit because he put her into that place.
Right.
So it's like, you know, he kind of had the power to say this whole back. We went as deep. I'm trying to quote something that I wrote, but we went further than I would have liked. You know, you know what you did, but you also, it didn't help that you had this thing inside of you, guy. You know, I can't do nothing about this. He won't let me.
He was powerless against it himself. So
yeah. So the power of that just kind of built into that. So yeah, no, we was. You know, when we was doing those close-ups and then people and the characters were looking at the camera, looking straight at the camera, yes, they were talking to the audience. They was trying to hypnotize. They was hypnotizing. They was trying to, you know, when you get hypnotized, that person ain't far away from you. Like right there, he or she is right there in your face and the voices, and you can feel their body and their temperature on you. To try to get you to relax, you know, you're looking at this. These people are looking at you, and they're trying to hypnotize you, and that's, you know, and I'm hoping that works for y'all because y'all watched it multiple times and took notes and kind of died.
It did, man. It, you know, well, another thing putting, too, putting is, your trust in someone after everything she had been through, and then
when he said, "Trust me,"
I think that was the biggest thing that pissed me off about Harold is like, after everything she's been through, and she's putting her trust in you, and you do that, but then you're like, because you know when you said that Harold was not supposed to be a likable character, because I think there is this sort of fight with Harold where you're like, is Harold a good is Harold kind of a good guy, but then he's got this thing in him that he can't fight against, but you don't seem like you're trying hard enough. Like, it was, it was hard. My ultimate thing with Harold at the end is it was very hard for me to decide if he was supposed to be likable or not, or if he was just like any other infallible human that just gave in and just didn't fight against it.
Also,
some people don't want to put in that fight. They just don't. They don't want to.
Also, you have a lovely voice as well.
You have a great voice. I mean, the fact that you weren't originally supposed to play Harold, and like that just worked out so well.
You have such a lovely voice for being a hypnotist.
That's perfect.
I was like, I even said it to my fiance. I'm like, he has a nice voice.
Yeah, that was the first thing. As soon as I was like, I love his voice.
I was like, he probably hypnotized me. I could probably mute it.
I should be careful how hard I'm watching this scene, because I might actually end up hypnotized.
I'm like, maybe I should mute this. Maybe I shouldn't listen to him.
I tell people that's my after midnight voice.
I love it.
Like take a deep breath.
I love it.
Cause this, you see how I'm talking, you know, it's deep, but it has a brightness to it.
Yes.
Because I do data entry at work at my job. So this is my talking voice. Like, hello, my name is Chris Shern. I am from TV Access. I'm calling on behalf of blah, blah, blah. I would like to speak to you about this PSA that we're promoting.
We have our code switching voices.
That's how I talk when I'm on the phone.
Yep.
Talking business. So this is me talking with the interview. So the hypnotherapy voice is, you know, just like this, real slow, real gentle, real like just relaxed and making sure I'm saying the right things.
Is this ASMR?
I know, right? So, immediately turned
so face. That was kind of the whole, you know, like. So yeah, when we did that scene, we had the dialogue, but we also just improv, and I just kind of the goal was just trying to put the character in the right places, and then that's kind of what we try to do. So yeah,
it came together.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know if I was gonna play a hero at first, if it was right. And then it kind of didn't help where, you know, Savannah May, who played Erica, she's mixed race. So it's like, well, somebody else got to play that character. If I assaulted Amanda's character, she's white and I'm black, and then Savannah is, you know, Erica's character is mixed race, it'll probably make more sense that I play that character. And I play her daughter.
And it did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it did make sense. Again, because of how implied everything was, because, you know, and then the scenes between Harold and her, you know, it was like, oh, it was like dad patching the demon torch onto daughter.
Right.
And, like, she's the, you know what I mean? Like, so,
So, honestly, yeah, Rosemary's Baby, Damien, you know, the Almond, inspired by stuff like that.
I love Rosemary's Baby, but I absolutely mm-hmm. love The Omen. I thought that The Omen is a, yeah, that is a great, yeah. great film.
So just out of curiosity, I don't even think I asked you, how did you hear about our podcast?
I'm on a lot of Facebook groups, and I honestly, to be honest with you, I stumbled upon podcasts and things just popped up. Because I'm always looking for horror, whatever. And I love that you guys are, you know, you guys are doing podcasts and you're supporting independent, you know, horror films. And I'm a seeker. I love it. Cracks me up when people say there ain't nothing good out there to watch or listen to. But I'm like, well, you ain't seeking, man.
Thank you.
I've been lazy. So I stopped having people spoon feed you shit. Like, I found you guys. I can't even tell you how I found you. I just was going through a lot of podcasts and a lot of horror stuff, and then you guys popped up, and then I was looking at your stuff, and I'm like, hey, you know, I'm like, hey, if you guys are, you know, I got a movie out, you guys are interested in interviewing me, and yeah, you know, it was a good process, because I think I met you guys back in, late November, early December.
Yeah, I felt so bad. I was like, oh, shit, the holidays. I completely forgot to get back to him.
Oh, boy. And that's always a... I mean, well, just personally for people, that's a crazy time of year, but it worked out. I mean, it definitely did, because
I'm so glad you reached out. I really am, because
we have seen so many. This is another one. We were just talking about this. We have found, now again, we always liken back to like Tubi and Amazon Prime, and how we have found some true hidden gems mm-hmm. on both of those streaming platforms with horror films. Yeah. Some duds. Some you can't always judge a book by its, you know, you go, oh, this looks good. And then you're like, oh, boy, that did not deliver what I thought. Going back to your cover art, I think that I kind of have this thing with cover art for movies that it can kind of work to, you don't want to give away too much of the film, but you also don't want to like false advertise in a way. Like, I think it can kind of work. It's sort of hard. It's kind of a double-edged sword. With like when you're putting that initial like advertising poster out there for a film, we have found so many incredible horror films on Tubi that have led us to interview. I mean, this one, the Andy Baker tape, I think Butterfly Kisses was another one. We've had a lot of, I mean, Tubi's been a great platform for horror. I personally think, and independent horror as well.
Yeah. No, one thing, I mean, I've been watching a lot more independent, low budget, micro budget horror films as of late, because one, I like supporting that. Two, I like donating to their crowd funds to get their movies made, because we all need to, like, my next film that I've been working on, I'm self-funding it myself. This is only my project, Kissing Castle Productions. So this is a project I wrote and directed, you know.
That's awesome.
So this project I'm working on, and I'm doing a crowdfund for this one as well. So it's like, just like even with Hollywood, you gotta find money to make these movies. And plus, I want to pay my cast and crew. It's cool what we did with Evil Earth, but for this one, you know, I'm definitely trying to help people out. So I find a amazing array of different horror movies and movies in general, especially on Tubi, you know, from independent filmmaking, because that's what we get, and that's what we're not gonna be on Netflix or HBO Max or Hulu. I mean, Tubi's been really, if anything, our movie is out there. So
that's
it's helpful to have that. So,
and just to know too, in the horror community, because I'm pretty big in the horror community on Twitter, everybody talks about Tubi. Everybody talks about how if you're looking for a horror movie, a new horror movie to watch, it's usually always Shudder and Tubi. So yeah. Tubi is one of the big ones, because Tubi has way better horror movies than Netflix. Tubi has way better horror movies than Hulu. Hulu never really has shit, but
I think for horror fans,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
For horror fans,
and it's
that are looking
for
everything.
I love what Tubi is the one to beat with Shudder when it comes to horror movies, because they actually deliver.
Yeah,
unlike these big name corporations.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's actually it's this family. They're called the Addams Family. But their last name is Adams, so it's the guy John Adams. He directs and he scores his films and he edits. He's a fantastic filmmaker. Him and his wife Toby and his kids Lulu and Zelda Adams. So they're all called the Adams Family. So they got a Tubi original called Where the Devil Roams. And it's very
that's on my list.
Very art house, very it's a horror, it's a body horror type film.
It's on my list. Yep.
Yeah. And on Shudder they have a movie they have a Shudder original called Hellbender.
I've heard about that one. Yeah,
they're very odd. They're gonna be on Al's show next month.
Oh, nice.
Al is like he's fantastic. Like, I love that guy.
He's a great interviewer. I mean, like I said, I just stumbling up on, I especially in preparation for interviews, if we know other people, if I know other people that we're having on have done other interviews, because I don't always want to, this purely comes from watching like the more of the bigger name interviews that like real big name actors, you can see like you can clearly tell if somebody just went on their IMDb and is asking them the most basic, boring ass questions, and they're like suffering through this because clearly this person didn't do any research at all about them.
Oh, I love when they do interviews and they haven't even watched the movie. I'm like, what are you doing? You haven't even watched the movie. You haven't
what? Throw myself out a window. It's like, you didn't even watch the movie? Like, yeah, nothing. Yeah. So you have to prepare yourself, It just makes for a better interview. We've just had better interviews, essentially. And I did not. So his, I'm like, great. There are two podcasts this week I've added to my that I found that I love that I can now add to the plethora of other podcasts that I listen to. But yeah, his was great. That was a great interview. And then just knowing a lot of. It also, like, it pulled just your inspirations and different things. Like, again, the scene in the opener where you guys are the awkward eye contact. Going back to that, the music, the way it was scored, it was like, oh, man, okay. And so then it's like, it gives me a totally different understanding of that scene. Now knowing what inspired that or where that came from, which is another reason why we like doing these interviews, because I think if people have already watched the movie and then they listen to the interviews and they go back and watch it again, they can watch it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's like, it's not that you didn't appreciate it the first time, but knowing what you know now, it's a completely different movie.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. It's cool to have. I love to have conversations about this movie, because I mean, I've had people who was confused, and I mean, some people say, was he hypnotized at the beginning? Like right in that set, was this all happening right at the beginning of the movie? I'm like, if you say so, I don't know. That's what you think. I mean, there's a lot of sense you guys seen it. There's a lot of things you probably missed out on, where you can see her face, the close up of her face when she's hypnotized. You can see that like plaster, like is hinted on like a wall or a doorway, where you can see her face. Like when they was at the bar, and then he snapped his fingers, and they was in the next bar. There's a scene where her face, where it shows her face all the hypnotized face, is we put it on one of the doors.
Okay.
Or when the scene at the end when and this is like a big no-no. Some filmmakers say that's a big no-no when you're doing back-to-back-to-back flashbacks. So when we get the other flashback, when she's like, "Hey man, you know, can you help me out now?" When they went into when the last time they pretty much really saw each other and had a conversation was when her mother died, and then he was in the room and she was trying to clean out the closet. So and when she walked out the room. And then you see, like, the wide shot, you can see an image, a silhouette in the hallway. And that's a silhouette of Kimberly. And that's a silhouette of Kimberly in the hallway when it cuts back to them, you know, in the present time. And the dress she was wearing in the hallway was her mother's dress.
I noticed that when he said, don't touch a single thread, the dress she was holding was her mother's dress.
Yeah,
and I was like, "Oh, that's the dress she was wearing in the hallway, like when she first gets hypnotized."
Yeah. So that's the same dress. So at the end of that scene, when they was in the room together, you could see in the hallway, you could see a silhouette of her for like a split second, and that was a continuation in the hallway. And all the clothes that was in the closet, because there you got yelled at 3 times. So I don't care. Hopefully that built people curiosity. All the clothes in that closet. Those are the clothes that was worn throughout the movie.
I feel like, though, for any movie, especially a psychological movie, you have to watch it more than once because you're gonna catch. There's still shit that I'm catching in Hereditary. There's still shit that I'm catching in certain other movies where I'm just like, I didn't catch that before. I didn't catch. I could watch anything from Mike Flanagan 1,700 times and still be like, I didn't see that before. I didn't catch that before.
Oh, yeah.
So anything psychological, yeah, absolutely. You have to watch it more than one time.
Yeah, Mike Flanagan. I don't get caught up in the whole, you know, elevated horror bullshit. Cause they just say, all right, oh, it's horror with a brain. It's like, nah, man. It's just like people want. Ain't nothing wrong with telling a good story and adding gore within that story. That's awesome. That makes it more. All right, cool. Yeah, I like cheap, funny, campy crap. I've been watching a lot of people. I guess it's been a thing for the independent world, the low budget independent world. I've been watching a lot of camp counselor slasher type movies as of late. I'm like, that's cool.
Have you seen Final Girls?
Final Girls? Oh yeah.
I was gonna say, if you're into that, definitely watch that one because that one's really good and it's fucking funny.
Yeah, I love Final Girls. But when we was talking before the interview, like, it's awesome that, you know, I didn't know what, when we started talking, like, oh, the female, this is awesome. Yeah, I like, because, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I love women, but I just love, especially in horror, man, it makes for a good story. Obviously, I don't think Eva Lurie has a final girl in it. It ain't that kind of movie, but yeah, it's just something about a story with a woman's point of view that kind of it grabs me because first and foremost, I make movies for me, and then hopefully people gravitate to what I'm trying to do. But right. my next movie is definitely it's a woman dad guy stuff. That I'm trying to build. I'm trying to put it this way. I'm trying to build my own Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers franchise. Because that don't exist. I don't consider Carrie, and that Carrie was a pissed off teenager that had supernatural powers. That's what people love that deserved it.
1000%. You are very right. And I still love that movie, but you're right.
Yeah. So for my next movie, Freak Effects, which is about a Foley artist who makes sound effects for horror movies. That's gonna be a fun trip.
Yeah, if you got we'll have you I know we're getting ready to wrap up here. We'll have you plug everything. Because I was on your social media and I was like, oh, for sure, definitely wanna see this new movie come out.
Especially because you have out. You know, we really appreciate, you know, a man saying the things that you're saying about, you know, doing horror things, because that really, and the fact that you want to shine light on women and you want to tell the stories right, and you appreciate that, and we appreciate that. We appreciate that big time, and that's very kind of you to say. So thank you very much.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I mean, like, from the way I write music to the way I, you know, to do the things I do with the movie stuff, like, because, I mean, I'm a songwriter as well. I write a lot of songs with a female point. I'm like, I can't sing this. And then I tell my friend Ivory, I'm like, hey, can you sing this for me? And then she'll sing it. Because the end of the closing credit song.
I love that song too. Yeah,
the Blood Moon song. Me and my buddy Ryan Caldwell wrote that, and then obviously we need to get Zoe to sing on this song. You know, it makes sense. You know, for the Blood Moon song. So we wrote that in like an hour, and then he recorded it, and then he added all this stuff to it. But yeah, it's to me, it makes for an interesting thing. I'm a guy. I'm still a guy, but I'm just like, it's more interesting. It's more. I want to see a woman fuck shit up. I want to see a woman in a mask and cut people's throats. And I want to see.
Same.
I want to see the energy. So when you see this new movie, I'm hoping I do justice to that. Like we had to do some things where I'm like, yo, let's go. It's okay. We gotta get it. But we still have fun. But yeah, I love it. It's a great time. And you know, I'm all about woman power. I love it.
I came from
a woman. Y'all created.
Exactly. dear mama, like, got my name from a woman. For sure. No, and I wanted to say too that I think just in wrapping up that as I'm always asked, especially as a woman, why are you a horror fan? Mm-hmm. And I think for me personally, it's the story of adversity. You know, we all have a story. Some of us a crazier story than others. And my story is a lot of my story is survival and adversity. And it, watching any movie from, you know, Aliens to Nightmare on Elm Street to just Final Girl to any of these, we're like, the woman is the one. And I dare I even say Kimberly, because it's not so much that she's a final girl, but just any woman, any central female figure in a horror film that is just, that comes out the badass at the end, that just fucks shit up, and out of adversity, out of that trauma, she doesn't falter, she doesn't give up. She keeps fighting. She keeps fighting. I feel like that, you know, that's a mantra. That's something every day. You get up every day and you grind and you do it and you make it happen and you keep going and you don't let anything, no matter what, you don't let it beat you down. You keep going. Those stories of adversity. And so that's why I tell people, that's why I am a horror fan, because any story of adversity and you keep fighting, whether it's Freddy, whether it's an alien, whether it's the shush man, whoever, like you're fighting, you keep fighting, and you never stop fighting.
She Kimberly is a survivor. So when you
really, survivor,
because I think when you really do think about it, she went through a lot of things in her life, and this movie wasn't I got to get away from the slasher guy, like, not to give anything away. Y'all saw what happened at the end. Y'all like, holy shit, what? That she survived that shit. Nothing. And that thing, when she screamed and boom, 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 she survived.
Yes.
She survived this shit. This dude threw it to her. All these things that happened to her. And then it popped back out into this crazy supernatural craziness and all these other things that happened to her. She survived that. So she is a survivor. She survived that. So technically she is the final girl. She's like, fuck you. I'm, you know, she's like, yeah, what the fuck.
And then, yep, I love that. She said, fuck you.
So yeah, so, and there you go. I mean, exactly. Man, you guys are awesome.
It's perfect. You're awesome.
You're awesome.
Chris, thank you so much for this. We are so happy you reached out. We were so happy we got to watch this. Everybody, our audience, please, Evil Lurks, it's on Tubi. Please check it out. And Chris, plug anything, plug your socials, what you got coming up in the future, plug everything.
Cool. All right, so my name is Chris Shaw. I'm a filmmaker, musician, a funny guy. I love hugs and long walks on the beach when my feet are feeling right. So my information is, you can look me up on Instagram, Shern Chris. You can also look up Kissing Castle Productions on Instagram, Facebook. I'm eventually going to have my website up, kissingcastleproductions.com. I'm also in a Smile Rock, yes, a Smile Rock band called Invisible Cartoons. You can look us up at invisiblecartoons.com. Very upbeat, Smile Rock, positive music, you know, fun stuff. So yeah, I'm out here in the socials. So if you guys want to talk to me, you can talk to me.
Yes. Definitely.
Well, that's very nice of you. And thank you so much, like I said, for finding us, reaching out. And I'm so glad we got to do this. And I'm really glad we got to watch your movie because I really liked it.
Everybody, keep supporting indie horror.
Yes.
Yes.
Please keep supporting.
Thank you. Well, you have
thank
a good,
you, so much, guys.
You have thanks, a good Chris. Rest of your day. Thank you,
we really
you so
appreciate
much.
It. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, there concludes our interview with
Chris Shern.
With Chris Shern. sorry, we said that like three times. But please check out Evil Lurks, guys. It is currently streaming on Tubi. And we mean it when we say this is one that you have got to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is so much going on, but in the best way. And also, I love that we're not... obviously we don't want to, usually if we do reviews, we give spoilers, but typically in our interviews, we don't because the filmmakers want you to watch their film. That's how you're supporting it. So, and again, too, I don't think it would have done any good if we would have given any spoilers, because like we said, this is Casper had a totally different ending that she came up with. I had a totally different one that I came up with. This is really one of those movies that you need to interpret it however you interpret it.
That's
it has
why
a central story and
about...
it has a central meaning, which we mm-hmm. went over in the interview. But you really need to just watch it for yourself and pay close attention. And I mean, there's even things he said now. I want to go back and watch it so I can pick up a few things. But
there's things that's
pay
one
attention,
of the reasons why
watch
we
it
won't
more than once.
Talk about what our interpretations were because it's left up to interpretation. So.
But it was great, and we thank
it was.
Chris
thank you,
so
thank
much
you so much, Chris, that
for
was
that
a great time.
But next week, guys, we are in the month of March. This is Horror Hound Month, guys.
Well,
we
technically, this episode is in March.
Yeah, we're going to be pushing Horror Hound really hard on
yes.
our socials. But as far as next week's episode, we are going to be talking about something totally nonsensical. Back on our cryptid shit, we are going to be talking about Goatman.
I want a tattoo that says back on my cryptid shit.
Listen. I'm going to have to copyright that now.
Back on my cryptid shit.
Back on my cryptid shit.
I love it.
We're talking about Goatman. Guys, there are Goatman legends all over this country. I had no idea there were so many. Two of the most prominent ones we're going to be talking about, though, are the Goatman of Maryland and the Goatman's Bridge in Texas, where instead of a troll under the bridge, there is a Goatman. I would rather have the troll. That's just me personally. A Goatman would scare the shit out of me under a bridge. Anywhere, for that matter. So that's what, not to be confused with Sheep Squatch. We already talked about Sheep Squatch. Goatman. Totally different.
Is it a goat?
Goats and sheep are different.
Is it a demon?
Is it
a centaur? No, I'm kidding. Is it, what's his name from fucking Narnia? What the fuck was his name?
I forget.
He was a fawn.
But he was nice.
He was cute.
He was nice. We liked him. forget
his name. I almost said Kevin, but it's not.
I have to know. Oh my god, if it was Kevin.
It's not Kevin.
I'd be like, why did they give this character the most random name? We're going to call him Kevin. Anyway. So
yeah, next week's going to be the Goat Man because in preparation for Horror Hound coming up, we're actually going to be trying to cover the convention more with social media, promoting it more, stories, posts, things of that nature. So we're looking very forward to doing all of that.
So you're going
to
see more of our mushes. So get used to that. This mug over here. Listen. Anyway.
Get used to that. Anyway, so thank you guys so much for listening today. Of course, go watch Evil Lurks on Tubi. If you don't have Tubi, it's free. And you should get it, especially if you're a horror fan, because Tubi delivers.
Put it on your phone, computer, your laptop, your tablet, your TV. All anything that you stream your film and TV pleasures on.
And we thank you guys. Of course, you know we have all the socials, the Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all at DFWTO Podcast. Handle is DFWTO8811. If you have any questions, concerns, want to say hey, or have an idea for the podcast, please email us at DFWTO8493@gmail.com. And lastly, give us a follow on Spotify, Podbean, and iTunes. Make sure to follow us, subscribe, rate, and you'll always know when we put out a new episode.
And buy our merch.
Buy please our support. Buy our shit.
Yeah.
We got cool shit.
We do.
Very cool shit anyway. All right, guys. Thanks so much for your support. We love you. And remember,
don't fuck with the original.
Okay, bye.